No surprise here, but you know I gotta have my devices when I travel. I would be lost without my smartphone. I use it for directions, to find things to do, and most importantly, where to eat. I rely on it as a digital music player to enhance my experience as I explore a new place. Oh, and sometimes I even use it to make calls and stuff. That's the kind of traveler I am. And if you travel, you know what kind you are, too. That's why you go with the Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card. If you travel, you know. Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Now your ideas don't have to wait. Now they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas, loves expanding your business and evolving your passions. They push what technology can do so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com. Welcome to now. We all can't help but wonder what adventure lies just over the next ridge. A Nissan Rogue, Nissan Pathfinder, or Nissan Armada will take you there. If you're taking on your adventure in a new 2024 Nissan Rogue, class-exclusive Google built-in is your always-updating assistant to call on for almost anything. Google Assistant, Google Maps, and Google Play Store are built right into the 12.3-inch HD touchscreen infotainment system of the 2024 Nissan Rogue. Nissan's SUV has the capabilities to take you where you want to go. Learn more at NissanUSA.com.
Get in touch with technology with Tech Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey there, everyone, and welcome to Tech Stuff. I'm Jonathan Strickland.
And I'm Lauren Volkbaum.
And we're going to bring to you the second part of our episodes on Microsoft and just kind of the Microsoft story and how it developed as a company and the big things that shaped it and the big things it did to shape the industry.
Right, right. Going from 3 to over 90,000 employees in the course of just a couple of decades.
Yep. And we stopped last time at 1994 when Bill Gates and Melinda French tied the knot. So we're picking up with 1995.
Which was a big year.
Yeah.
They released Windows 95, shockingly enough.
Yes, and for those of you who can remember the commercials back then, these, of course, were the ones that featured the a little band from across the pond called the Rolling Stones that did a song called Start Me Up. And it's because Windows 95 introduced a new feature to Windows.
The Start button.
The Start button, which some people didn't care for at first. It's kind of funny how technology works. Usually a change gets rolled out, everyone reacts like it's the end of the world, and then within a few years they count on whatever it is that was changed, and then it gets changed again, and then they act like it's the end of the world. Rinse and repeat. We see this usually at a very frequent basis with Facebook redesigns.
Right.
So Windows 95 showed a lot of new developments, new features that some people kind of balked at first, but Gates sent out a memo that same year. He was seeing that there was a new trend coming up. And this, keep in mind, 95, this is, again, a couple years after the World Wide Web starts to develop, a couple years since the general public has become aware of a thing called the Internet. The Internet itself had been around since the 80s, but very few people knew about it until right around this time. And he sent out a memo called the Internet Tidal Wave to the senior staff of Microsoft. And he said that he thought that the Internet would be the most important thing for the company to concentrate on.
That it, in fact, was going to be the most important development since the advent of the PC.
Yeah. So it turns out that, you know, he was very much right.
it was an early call to make, but he saw it, you know,
I've read a little bit of criticism that he could have jumped on that a little bit earlier.
Yeah. It's actually, the biggest criticism is that he waited too long for this. And, in fact, you could, since this is after the World Wide Web has become a thing, you could see why. I mean, this is before they've had their own web browser. So there's no browser for Microsoft.
I believe in the summer of that year was when the first version of IE, Internet Explorer was released.
So, yeah.
But
we're finally getting there, whereas like everyone else is dependent upon other browsers from other companies, and Microsoft could have been on the ground floor earlier. But at the same time, he definitely saw that this was going to be something that Microsoft could not ignore. And that sort of set the company in motion to really think about how they were going to approach the internet. And they actually held Internet Strategy Day. So hooray for that. It's also the same year that Forbes said that Gates is no longer the richest man in America. He is the richest man in the world.
They were German, apparently, that year. But
I don't know why I said it that way. But yes, in the world, in the entire world, Bill Gates, richest man. And it's a title that he retains until 2008 when he lost it in a battle royal against Randy Macho Man Savage.
I would watch that. I would watch that.
Mm-hmm. I made that part up. But yes, he did hold the title of richest man in the world from 95 to 2008.
Less successfully. It's also the year that he announced one of your favorite bits of Microsoft history.
Oh, right. Bob.
Microsoft Bob.
Microsoft Bob. We did a full episode about Microsoft Bob. And really, I meant to say this in the last episode. A lot of the stuff we're talking about, we could clearly do a full podcast on just any of these.
Like, oh, absolutely.
We've done full podcasts on versions of Windows, much less on the Windows operating system itself. And, you know, we have done a full episode on Bob, so we won't go over it again other than to say it was a special type of graphic user interface designed for people who were not at all familiar with computers, and it was meant to make it a much more welcoming, intuitive experience. But just go back and listen to that episode to learn how
it wound up being extremely unsuccessful.
That's
kind
a good way
of
putting it.
Kind of placating in a way, like it just wasn't.
It was just a massive failure. It was a massive failure, and it had some terrible features, including a security feature that did not work.
Right.
So,
as of 95, Microsoft's overall revenue was $5.9 billion, and the company had over 17,000 employees.
Wow.
So they were doing all right.
So by 1996, Microsoft releases Explorer 3.0. So they have really gotten into the browser biz at this point. And 3.0 is really kind of the first consumer-based browser that people really get a chance to see. Netscape, which was the company behind another browser called Navigator, sent a little message to the United States Department of Justice to say, Microsoft's kind of being unfair. They're essentially saying that since we're the ones who's providing the operating system to all these different computers that various manufacturers are building, maybe you should include our web browser and not include anyone else's web browser. So in other words, they were saying that they were being anti-competitive. They were using their influence as an operating system designer to muscle out other browsers, including Navigator. And so this starts another round of investigations from the Department of Justice into Microsoft's business practices. On July 15th of 1996, MSNBC debuts. So that's a news network. It was a partnership between NBC News and Microsoft. And at first, it wasn't a 24-hour news channel. It would eventually become that. But at the time, it had a certain block of hours that were available on a per-day basis, and it would grow from there. And it became sort of a competitor to companies like CNN.
Sure.
And then that's the same year that Microsoft stock split again. So,
they were doing so well that,
yeah. And they also launched Windows CE. Now, Windows CE is different from the other operating systems that we're talking about here. This was one that was designed to work on devices that had minimal storage. So this would become the foundation for future operating systems built for mobile devices, particularly the Pocket PC, which I have fond memories of reading about. I never actually owned one. But it was one of those devices that was ahead of its time.
Pocket PC was sort of the precursor to the tablet computers that we use today, but the implementation was never quite such that it would resonate with consumers. So people didn't tend to buy them. Is what I'm getting to. But Windows CE was like that was sort of the operating system that kind of started down this branch in the evolutionary path.
Sure. And it was around that time and I don't have specific notes about this, but correct me if I'm wrong that like Palm Pilot and other mobile devices were starting to
personal
really
digital assistants were starting to pick up. This is really before smartphones had started to become to gain
existent
traction. Yeah, there were a few early examples, but really personal digital assistants were more common. And these were devices that were very similar to smartphones, just without the phone part.
Right.
They were able to run applications. They could hold your contact information, but they weren't smartphones yet.
Really, the problem was that wireless technology hadn't advanced to the point where it was useful.
Yeah. I mean, you could get basic information like text information, but anything like
more than 140 characters was problematic.
Yeah, anything beyond some text was going to take you a while to receive it on these old cellular networks. In 1997, they released Internet Explorer 4.0, and also they released Office 97, which was another one of those productivity software suites. And the company acquired another company called Interse Corporation, which made analysis software for web activity. So this is, again, the company following through on that memo that Bill Gates sent saying we need to focus on the Internet. That's where our future business is going to be. They also agreed to acquire Web TV Networks for about $425 million in stock and cash.
Yeesh.
Web TV. I remember Web TV. I had a friend who actually had Web TV, so this was a way of accessing the World Wide Web on a television. You would get a remote control that was essentially a keyboard and didn't really do so well, as I recall. I mean, apart from my friend, I don't know anyone who used Web TV.
Sure. Well, it was a kind of prescient move on behalf of,
yes,
of everyone involved, because, you know, again, there wasn't enough of an internet connection for people to really find it useful yet. But it was also coming on the tail end of that 1996 Telecommunications Act that looped internet services in with cable services and allowed a lot of partnerships to start developing.
And it's a good example was the partnership that Microsoft entered into with Comcast. They invested $1 billion for about 11.5% ownership in Comcast to help deploy high-speed data and video services. Now, this was in Microsoft's best interest as well as Comcast, the idea being that we need to build out this infrastructure because the internet is getting more and more important. But in order for it to be useful, we need to increase bandwidth and accessibility.
Right.
You know, the more customers have access to the internet, the more product we can sell. So therefore, this makes sense from a business perspective. And they also invested $150 million in another company that might surprise you, considering the fact that they had a little kerfuffle in our last episode.
Apple.
Yep.
Back in with Apple this year.
Another software development deal for Apple platforms. And that's when Bill Gates announced the formation of the Gates Library Foundation. Now, this was a predecessor to some of the philanthropic organizations that Bill and Melinda Gates would launch in the future.
Right. This was also the year that the Department of Justice announced its intent to hold Microsoft in contempt of the 1994 decree that they had agreed to, which was one of those antitrust decrees, which you can go back and hear a little bit about in the previous episode.
Yeah.
To the tune of like $1 million per day.
Yeah.
Until
that's a lot of contempt.
They stopped bundling IE with their operating system,
yeah,
basically.
Yeah, this was a big deal. I remember this unfolding at the time when I had entered into the workforce at this point, and I just remember following it and being kind of knowing the basic details, but it's really in retrospect being able to look at it more thoroughly, you really can see how without this intervention, the landscape would be very different right now as far as the way the internet and the way browsers work. That was the same year that Microsoft also acquired Hotmail, which of course is a web-based email service. Hotmail existed for quite some time. It does technically still exist, although now it is officially part of Outlook.com.
Oh, okay.
So it's part of the web-based Outlook suite as opposed to its own Hotmail thing. I still have a Hotmail address.
I never had a Hotmail address.
Wow.
I eschewed it.
Well, did you have a Yahoo mail?
Yeah, I still have. I still have Yahoo.
Oh my!
Goodness, my gracious!
Technically, I had both, so I can't really complain. But no, I have a Hotmail address that the only reason I haven't just completely told people to stop using it is because there's like three people who know me who still send me messages via Hotmail, and I like to pretend that I care about what they have to say, so I keep it going. 1998. That's when things get real, yo.
Yeah, yeah. The official antitrust lawsuit against Microsoft was filed.
Yeah, by the Department of Justice and 20 state attorneys general in the United States. They file an anti-competitive lawsuit against Microsoft. That's also the same year that Microsoft launched Windows 98, and also the year that they decided to do away with the Office of the President. Now, if you remember from our last episode, Microsoft had originally, Bill Gates had served as the president of Microsoft for a while, and then they got some presidents from other companies to come in and become the president of Microsoft. And then they switched to the strategy of having an office of the president where the duties of the president were split into three roles. And so three different executives held positions within the office of the president rather than having a single president. This is when they go back to having a single president. And that first single president is Ballmer. Steve Ballmer becomes president of Microsoft. Bill Gates remains on as chairman and CEO. And so now the corporate structure has changed again. And this would be the way that the corporate structure would remain for about 10 years, more or less. Spoiler alert. Please stay tuned for the exciting conclusion because we've got a lot to say. That's also when Microsoft launched MSN Search, which was a web-based search engine. This is what would eventually turn into what we now know as
Bing.
Yeah. I'm glad you said it and I didn't have to. It's a perfectly legitimate web search engine, even if Bing itself is not a cromulent word. But it works well. I have no complaints against the way Bing works. I still tend to use Google more frequently, but I don't have anything against Bing. 1999. Okay, so 1999 was when something really bad happened. This was a virus that broke out. So 1999, a virus called the Melissa virus.
Oh, right.
Ran rampant across the internet. Now, this virus was, in the grand scheme of things, not that malicious in that it didn't try to brick your computer necessarily or wipe out all your data. Although, you know, you could always tweak the malware to make it do worse things than what it was designed to do. What it was designed to do was really just copy itself and send itself to other computers within a person's contact list. And it worked within Microsoft Word or Microsoft Outlook, and it exploited vulnerabilities there. So if you were to try and open this document either in Outlook or in Word, what it would then do is copy itself and mail itself out to all of the contacts that you had. So if this hit an executive who happened to have hundreds of business contacts in their Outlook, that email would go out to hundreds of people. And the email traffic alone ended up bogging down parts of the internet during 1999. This also really kind of opened people's eyes to the fact that a lot of the software we depend upon heavily from Microsoft could have vulnerabilities in it, and that if you were to exploit those vulnerabilities, you could cause quite a bit of damage. It was not the first example of a computer virus by a long shot.
No, but it was kind of the most propagated at the time. And also, it received, the internet was really in the news at this point.
Yeah.
Everyone was very excited about what was going on. It was right before that .com crash.
Yeah.
And so it was really big.
Yeah. Yeah. This is a point where, you know, we've finally gotten beyond just the college students and nerds who know what the internet is, right?
Yeah.
So I was both a college student and nerd in the early days of the internet, so I was doubly aware of it. But this is the point where you would say things like, oh, yeah, my parents know what the internet is because it's gotten that big. So when a virus hits and a virus spreads this quickly, it's one of those black eyes against the internet. It's a black eye against Microsoft. This was just bad news for the company.
Sure. Although that was the year that Microsoft's stock value peaked for all time on December 27th at around $59 per share.
Yeah. Now, keep in mind, whenever the stock splits, the value of the stock goes down, but the value of the company remains the same because you've added more stock. So this is not to say that the value of the company has decreased over time since then, rather than just the price of the shares, the individual shares themselves.
Right.
Because it gets kind of complicated. But that was a big year for Microsoft, and not because of product releases. It was just because of the way the business was going and also this virus outbreak.
The year 2000, however, was a big year for product releases.
Yes, it was.
That was when Windows 2000, again, shocking that those numbers line up like that, was debuted.
Yeah, Windows 2000 Professional and Server Business, OS. Yeah, very snappy name. And also, that's the year that Microsoft celebrated its 25th anniversary. They also unveiled the .NET platform for web services, and that was the year that, you know, I kind of lied when I said that Ballmer became president and Gates remained chairman, and then that would remain the same till 2008. Not entirely true, actually, because Ballmer then stepped into the role of CEO, and Gates became the chief software architect for Microsoft. I think most people still viewed Gates as being kind of the leader of Microsoft, especially when you consider that at big events like CES,
he was always the personality. Yeah, Ballmer was always quiet.
Yeah.
Quiet's the wrong word. You're very correct.
Developers. Do a search, folks. You've heard me say it before. If you have not seen it, go to YouTube, type in Steve Ballmer developers, and you can see. Now, remember, Ballmer comes from this from a salesman kind of perspective. Dude gets pretty loud if he wants to be. But your point being that he was not the kind of the voice of leadership.
For excellent reasons, he was not really the personality that was driving Microsoft.
Yeah. He's definitely a very savvy businessman.
Extremely savvy businessman.
That's also the year that the Department of Justice Judge Jackson ruled that Microsoft should be split into two units. That's why today we have two different companies of Microsoft. Why Microsoft cannot be
was struck down later on. But the concept was to have one half that would be doing the operating systems and the other half with other software.
Yeah, other types of software besides operating system. Yeah, Judge Jackson actually said that Microsoft was an abusive monopoly.
Yeah.
And, like Lauren said, this decision would eventually be overturned. So that's why there's not like, two different versions of Microsoft out there. One just doing Windows and the other one doing everything else. Revenues for Microsoft that year hit $229 billion.
With over 39,000 employees.
That's a lot of employees. And that's when Bill and Melinda Gates launched the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. It's also when Microsoft acquired a company called Vizio Corporation. So those of you who are familiar with Vizio's products, that will ring a bell. And Microsoft introduced the Pocket PC 2000. And that's the one that had an operating system that was based on Windows CE, and the operating system on the Pocket PC 2000 would evolve into what would become Windows Mobile, we could do a full episode just on Windows Mobile as well, because that's one of those operating system stories that has its own interesting rise and fall narrative. Of course, Windows Mobile, not a thing anymore. Instead, we have Windows Phone. I'll talk about that in a little bit. But in 2001, that's when the Court of Appeal overturned Judge Jackson's decision to break Microsoft up into two corporations. But the Court of Appeal did say that the company illegally used licensing agreements to lock out Netscape from computer manufacturers.
Right. Microsoft ended up settling by agreeing to disclose its application programming interfaces with third-party software companies.
Yep. So, that was the resolution to that very long process of investigation and litigation. Microsoft that same year launched Windows XP, Which, 2001, Windows XP launches, and it was an incredibly popular operating system. So much so that there's probably some machines here in this office that are still running Windows XP.
I was running Windows XP personally until, 2012.
Yeah. So. Well, I was running Windows XP on my work computer until I destroyed, I don't know, maybe three computers ago. I've gone through a lot of computers while I'm here at How Stuff Works. I'm a little hard.
Shocking. Shocking.
Yeah. Well, I did shock
one. You seem like such a gentle soul.
One. Yeah. Well, I take it out on the machine.
Huh.
So when the machines rise up, I'll be first.
First in line.
Yep. Yeah. But at any rate.
Office XP also launched that year, which was another one of those Office Suite updates.
Right. And, so the Windows XP ends up becoming so, it's such a strong release that it would actually cause Microsoft some problems down the line when they tried to move to the next generation of operating systems.
Right.
This was also a year that was very important for both Microsoft and for Lauren and myself.
For me, specifically. Because
2001, that is the year Microsoft launched...
The Xbox.
And one of the launch titles for Xbox was Halo.
Halo, yes.
Yeah, so the video game that Lauren and I both share a deep and abiding love for.
I don't think I played it until 2002, actually.
But, yeah, well, that was one of the earliest titles for the Xbox was Halo, and it was one of the most... successful. I mean, Halo originally was developed as a game that was going to be on the Macintosh or the Mac computer at that time, and instead,
no one had ever seen any AI software quite like that in a first-person shooter.
And, yeah, it was
and also the capacity to LAN local area network boxes together.
Yeah, it was stuff that people were excited about on the computer front, because of course on computers you could have done this for a while, and also on games like GoldenEye for the Nintendo platform. It was sort of the next step in first person shooters. Now people who are first person shooter aficionados on the computer look down their nose at us, and we totally understand, but Lauren and I like to play with controllers, not with a mouse and keyboard. There's nothing wrong with mouse and keyboard.
That was the first first-person shooter that I played with a controller, and I didn't know how it was going to... I could not comprehend how it was going to work at first, because I was just like, I don't have a mouse.
How do you make it work?
How does it do?
But it turned out to work really well. So although the Xbox, it did pretty well in the United States, worldwide, it was kind of a runner-up to the PS2. So a distant runner-up to the PS2, really.
Sony had so many terrific titles out at that point.
The PS2 is one of the strongest video game consoles ever. If you look at the library of games, it's pretty phenomenal.
Yeah.
But that was where Microsoft said, we're going to get into the console gaming market. And so that was the first version of that. Skipping 2002, because I don't have any real information about Microsoft that year, to 2003. That's when they launched Windows Mobile 2003. So this is the first operating system they had officially called Windows Mobile. It's still mainly used for the Pocket PC at this time. They weren't really interested in developing smartphone operating systems at this point, although you could find the Windows Mobile operating system on a couple of early smartphones.
Also in 2003, a new version of Office launched, Office 2003, shockingly enough. They really clever naming systems here. The company at this point had over 54,000 employees, and their net revenues were above $32 billion.
Lots of money.
All the money.
2004, that's when we have another knock against Microsoft. That's when the European Commission begins to hold antitrust hearings against Microsoft. So, like we said before, the United States government's not the only entity that has gone after Microsoft for anti-competitive or antitrust reasons.
Certainly not. No, in 2005, actually, South Korea started to open antitrust hearings. They fined them like $32 million, but ultimately found them guilty and dropped the fine. So I'm not really sure the purpose of that one.
It was like a slap on the wrist. There's more that happens in 2005, but before we jump into that, all right, back to 2005.
No surprise here, but you know I gotta have my devices when I travel. I can't fly without my portable chargers and noise-canceling headphones keeping me immersed, and I'd be lost without my smartphone. In a new place, it's my connection to the familiar. I rely on it to get directions around town. I use my smartphone to look up things to do or, most importantly, where to eat. In countries where I don't speak the language, my phone becomes a universal translator. And heck, it can double as a digital camera, giving me the opportunity to snap unforgettable pictures of the sights that inspire me and fill me with joy. That's the kind of traveler I am. And if you travel, you know what kind you are too. That's why you go with the Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card. If you travel, you know.
Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Now your ideas don't have to wait. Now they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas, loves expanding your business and evolving your passions. They push what technology can do, so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com. Welcome to now. A spirit of adventure lives inside of us. Nissan's SUVs have the capabilities to transform your spirit of adventure into actual rubber meets the road into the wild, true blue, real life adventure. You just need a Nissan and a plan. Or better yet, just a Nissan. You can hop into a Nissan Rogue and discover what comes next. Don't worry, the Nissan Rogue has your back. Class-exclusive Google built-in is your always-updating assistant to call on for almost anything. Just climb in and go. No need to connect your phone. Google Assistant, Google Maps, and Google Play Store are built right into the 12.3-inch HD touchscreen infotainment system of the new 2024 Nissan Rogue. No matter where you roam, you'll stay connected to home. Life is one huge adventure, and every day is a little one. No matter if the ride you're on is big or small, a Nissan Rogue, Nissan Pathfinder, or Nissan Armada can elevate your adventure and push your limits to something new. Your next adventure is waiting for you. Get in a Nissan SUV and go. Learn more at NissanUSA.com.
Here's where another launch comes in. So, 2001, they launched the Xbox. 2005, we get the Xbox 360. Yes. Now, this is, of course, the, as of the recording of this podcast, the current generation of Microsoft console.
Mm-hmm. With the Xbox One on the horizon.
Yeah, it's coming very soon. We'll talk a little bit about that, of course, toward the end of this episode.
Mm-hmm. 2005 was also the year that Bill Gates received an honorary knighthood from the United Kingdom.
That's interesting. It's very rare when someone outside of the UK is awarded with an honorary knighthood. There is a particular order, as I recall, that's for non-UK citizens, but I honestly can't remember what it is because I don't expect to receive one anytime soon. The Queen will not return my phone calls.
How rude.
You said it, not I. I'm above such things. We are not amused. 2006. Gates at that point shocks the world by saying that he will step back from Microsoft by 2008. So this was big news. I mean, Gates was very
much...
He was
the figurehead, yeah.
Even though
he had only been the chief...
Software architect
for a while.
Yeah. He had not been the official leader of Microsoft, but people still thought of him as the leader of Microsoft. I mean, he was, like I said, yeah, at any big event like CES, he was still the guy who would deliver the keynote. So this was kind of big news, and he still was, you know, saying that there was going to be a transition plan, and he was still going to be working for Microsoft. He was going to scale back gradually. It wasn't like he was just going to quit one day.
Sure.
But it was you know, this was when he announced that.
That was also when Vista was released.
Yeah.
Which did not as well as they were. This is one of those operating systems that suffered for XP having been as solid of a system as
it
was.
Right, right. Now, XP, you know, like, people will even point out that the early days of XP was kind of a rough system, but they had released patches to XP over time.
And lots of patches, so many
lots
patches.
Lots and lots of them, yeah. Because you had to keep, you know, vulnerabilities would be discovered. Microsoft would fix the vulnerabilities, release a patch. More vulnerabilities would be discovered down the line. But
and since the internet was so widespread at this point, it was really easy for people to get a hold of those.
Yeah. And Microsoft XP, I mean, it became the foundation for a lot of software. And that one of the things we see time and again with big businesses is that they'll develop their own proprietary software to do business their own way, whatever their industry is. And these programs will be built with a particular operating system in mind. And Windows XP had been around for a while, so anything that was not going to be compatible with that Windows XP platform was not very useful to businesses. So Windows Vista, when it first came out, there were some compatibility issues. There were a lot of driver issues, too. Like, if you had developed hardware for PCs and you had special drivers to make it work on a computer, Vista did not work with a lot of drivers, which meant that people were reluctant to upgrade because they weren't sure that their stuff was going to work with their computer.
Yeah, it was also being sold as a much more home PC system.
Yes.
And at this point, I think a lot of people had phased into using, having multi-use computers, not separating their home life from their work life.
Right. And there were a lot of problems with Vista, and
I never touched it personally.
I did. I actually used it early when there were still a lot of problems with it. And part of it was that people who were reviewing it gave it pretty critical reviews, and it never recovered from that. Even though that Microsoft would address many of the problems that people had with Vista in subsequent updates, the damage had been done. Vista was known as being a bad operating system because of the criticisms that it received, and it never recovered. That was the year that they launched something else that also had a very rough life. It wasn't just Windows Vista that they launched that did not really ever gain serious traction. They also launched another example of hardware. So they had had some success with the video game console market. That's when they launched the Zune player.
Right.
So the Zune player was a competitor to the iPod, and later on a competitor to the iPod Touch. It was an MP3 player, media player, and it was a project that was headed by Jay Allard, who was actually the guy who was in charge of the Xbox 360 project before its launch. So he had already demonstrated success in developing hardware for Microsoft. The code name of this project was Argo, and It was innovative in many ways. One of the things that you could do with the Zune was you could share music with someone else who owned a Zune. So Lauren, if you had a Zune, I apologize ahead of time for actually saying you would own a Zune, a little brown MP3 player. They originally just came in brown.
I had Best Buy's proprietary MP3 player at the time, so I wasn't really
I had a compact.
Yeah.
Branded MP3 player for the longest time. It was a brick. If you had a Zune and I had a Zune and I had a song that you wanted to listen to, you just really needed to hear Jet Boy, Jet Girl. I happen to have that and I want to lend it to you. I could do that.
For a set period of time.
Yeah. It was
a loan.
Yeah. Essentially the file would remain viable on your Zune device for a certain number of plays or a certain amount of time. And then it would essentially delete itself. So you wouldn't be able to, copy music indefinitely.
And, right, sure. But
originally, do you remember what, you probably don't, but do you remember what this sharing service was eventually called by Microsoft?
Not.
Prepare yourself. Squirting.
No, it was not.
It was.
That is.
If I wanted to share my song, I would just squirt it right on over to you. My Zune would squirt at your Zune, and then your Zune could play that song.
I think I need an adult.
Yeah. Not my fault. Not my fault. I didn't come up with it. It's just what it's called. So I wish I were making that up. So let's move on to 2007. Before any more damage is done.
Yeah, that was the year that Office 2007 launched.
Yes, strangely enough. Gates also collected an honorary degree from his alma mater, or what would have been his alma mater,
Harvard. Right.
Yeah.
Also, for reference, that's the year that the iPhone launched from Apple.
Yes. Yes. And later on, Steve Ballmer would admit that Microsoft did not get...
Completely dropped the ball.
Yeah, they didn't move on smartphones when they should have, because They had been working on their Windows Mobile operating system for a few years, and if they had positioned themselves properly, there is a chance that they could have been the company that brought the smartphone to your average consumer.
Yeah.
Because that's what Apple did. You know, smartphones existed. People were using smartphones, especially executives, and using BlackBerries.
But they brought it to people.
Yeah, Apple's what...
Not that executives aren't people. I'm sorry, that sounded terrible.
Well, I don't know. Have you ever eaten with one?
Oh,
so,
snap.
That's a producer's joke. But Apple was able to succeed where no other company had as far as the consumer interest in smartphones is concerned. And later, Ballmer would admit that Microsoft really dropped the ball. They could have been the company to do that, or they at least had the potential. That's the same year that Bill Gates showed off the Milan Surface computer, which was later just called the Surface Table.
Right.
And eventually renamed the Pixel Sense to differentiate it from the Surface tablets that would come out down the line. So this was a table that could detect multiple touches, up to, I think, 10 or 20 touches. It used cameras to detect where you were making contact with the screen. So cameras were actually mounted below the screen. You could not see them. And they were measuring light in the infrared spectrum, as I recall. So that way it would detect where your fingers were. And you could manipulate stuff. You could even do things like have a digital camera that you had taken pictures with, put the digital camera on the surface, and then through a wireless transfer, it could pull the pictures from the camera onto the surface. So it was kind of a cool effect. It's like setting your camera down on a table, and suddenly the pictures you have taken are on the table. It was a neat idea. And it was really meant as something that would be used in entertainment establishments and retail establishments, not so much the average consumer. I mean, we're talking about tables that cost like $20,000.
Sure.
So it's not something that I'm going to go out and buy anytime soon, unless someone out there wants to be really altruistic. And that's also a year that something that is only – it's a story that's just now unraveling to a level where we can really get a grip on it. And it's something that Lauren and I are going to cover in the future. 2007 is when Microsoft becomes the first company to be involved in the NSA's PRISM program.
Right.
So PRISM, of course, is part of the NSA program to gather data about non-U.S. citizens related to any form of terrorism activity or any other dangerous activity directed toward the United States. And to do this, the NSA gathers a lot of information
from data collection.
And Microsoft was the first company to become part of this. Now, saying that, I don't want to give I don't want to imply that Microsoft was completely in favor of this. They were required by law to participate in this program. It's not like it's, you know, it's not like Microsoft volunteered necessarily. We don't know all the details of how each company became part of this, but we do know that, you know, these were all legal proceedings as defined by U.S. law. So just wanted to say that because, you know, we're still learning the details about this entire program. But yeah, 2007, that's when they started. It would be 6 years before we would all learn about this program. All right, 2008. So that's the year when Microsoft gets hit with a little slap on the wrist from the European Commission.
899 million euros, you can call that a slap on the wrist. Then yeah, that's a...
Yeah, don't slap me on the wrist with that because I can't afford it.
Yeah, Microsoft, of course, appealed that.
Yep, and they had hit a corporate-wide headcount. At this point, it's a global company. I mean, they've been a global company for several years at this point. Their global headcount is at 90,000.
And it was at that point that Gates, as promised, stepped down from his daily responsibilities at the company.
Yeah, it was also the last year that Bill Gates would do the keynote for CES.
Right.
And I remember seeing that keynote. I was at that CES, and it was interesting because they also presented a video of what Bill Gates' typical day was like at Microsoft leading up to his retirement because he had scaled back so far. And it was totally done for laughs.
I'm sure it was whimsical.
It was very amusing. It involved things like him putting his coffee cup on his car and driving off without remembering it, and then getting out of his car when he gets to Microsoft and picking up his coffee cup from the top of the car. It stayed there the whole time, and lots of goofy stuff. In fact, that was a weird year for Microsoft. There's a lot of goofy stuff that came out in 2008. For instance, there were a series of impenetrable ads that came out featuring Bill Gates and Jerry Seinfeld.
Right, I remember those. Those
yeah,
were so
I showed
strange.
You one of them. The one where Jerry Seinfeld's walking through a mall and he sees that Bill Gates is being fitted for shoes. And he says,
like
great
sneakers.
Googly moogly. Yeah. He comes into the sneaker store and there's Bill Gates trying on a pair of conquistadors. They run tight. If you guys are longtime fans of tech stuff, you've heard Chris and I have quoted this ad nauseum.
It's really esoteric. I mean, it's
such
a
bizarre
very
one.
Dada-esque.
There's one point where the shoe store asks Bill Gates if he has like the customer loyalty card, and Bill Gates flashes the card and it has on it his mugshot
from when he was a teenager, and he kept getting pulled over and at least on one occasion arrested for
traffic violations.
Yeah, tooling around in his Porsche.
Yeah, so he had his mugshot on there as just a little sly gag. The whole commercial is a commercial. It's like a Seinfeld episode. It's a commercial about nothing. It's a Microsoft commercial, but they're not promoting any particular product or service. It was really just odd.
Yeah, and
I loved it, but
sure. Along these lines, Gates maintained his position as the chairman of the board, of Microsoft,
but was no longer there on a day-to-day basis,
but was still very much a figurehead. But at that point, he was really trying to concentrate on the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation,
right? And that same year, the last day of 2008, December 31st, 2008. Several of the Zune 30 models all froze. There was an error inside the internal clock driver that was running on the Zune models. So anyone who had a Zune 30, there was a chance that their device would just freeze and it wouldn't work for another 24 hours. Within 24 hours, it pretty much fixed itself. But if you wanted to fix it before that, Microsoft did release a patch. But that was just one of those things that kind of indicated where, you know, a little software error could lead to a full hardware failure.
Mm-hmm.
I guess these
kind of glitches were not good. I mean, it wasn't an infrequent.
Yeah, I think it's fair to say that it didn't hurt Microsoft too badly, just because the Zune wasn't that popular.
Sure, but it did hurt the Zune.
Yeah. It didn't help. I mean, iPod was already so far in the lead that it would have been really hard to catch up to it.
Yeah.
2009. That's when Microsoft launched Windows 7. A lot of us thought that this was a pretty quick launch. I mean, it went from 2006 of Vista coming out to 2009 with the successor to Vista coming out. And a lot of people felt that that was a really short window.
I think it was more, I think it was partially a marketing ploy, just because Vista had done so poorly. They were like, let's get this name out of here.
Yeah.
And you know, we can do firmware updates, basically.
Yeah. It also confused people. They were like, how did Microsoft get to 7? And you started counting, and Microsoft has an official response to that, which I cannot remember. But I do, when I read it, I thought, that's one way to count. It definitely confused me, because people were dedicating a good amount of time figuring out, like, where the heck did 7 come from?
The last number had been 3.1.
Yeah, and then you had all the different variations, like Windows 95, Windows 98.
No surprise here, but you know I gotta have my devices when I travel. I can't fly without my portable chargers and noise-canceling headphones keeping me immersed, and I'd be lost without my smartphone. In a new place, it's my connection to the familiar. I rely on it to get directions around town, I use my smartphone to look up things to do, or, most importantly, where to eat. In countries where I don't speak the language, my phone becomes a universal translator. And heck, it can double as a digital camera, giving me the opportunity to snap unforgettable pictures of the sights that inspire me and fill me with joy. That's the kind of traveler I am. And if you travel, you know what kind you are too. That's why you go with the Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card. If you travel, you know.
Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Now your ideas don't have to wait. Now they have everything they need to come to life.
Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas, loves expanding your business and evolving your passions. They push what technology can do so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com. Welcome to now.
A spirit of adventure lives inside of us. Nissan's SUVs have the capabilities to transform your spirit of adventure into actual rubber meets the road into the wild, true blue, real life adventure. You just need a Nissan and a plan. Or better yet, just a Nissan. You can hop into a Nissan Rogue and discover what comes next. Don't worry, the Nissan Rogue has your back. Class-exclusive Google built-in is your always-updating assistant to call on for almost anything. Just climb in and go. No need to connect your phone. Google Assistant, Google Maps, and Google Play Store are built right into the 12.3-inch HD touchscreen infotainment system of the new 2024 Nissan Rogue. No matter where you roam, you'll stay connected to home. Life is one huge adventure, and every day is a little one. No matter if the ride you're on is big or small, a Nissan Rogue, Nissan Pathfinder, or Nissan Armada can elevate your adventure and push your limits to something new. Your next adventure is waiting for you. Get in a Nissan SUV and go. Learn more at NissanUSA.com.
You had, you know, but people were adding it up and they're thinking, I can't get to seven. Depending on which way I go, I can either get six or eight. But but eventually Microsoft did actually release a response saying this is why it's Windows 7.
Right, right.
That's also when they launched a fourth generation Zune, which was meant to compete against the iPod Touch. This was the one that had the OLED display. It had HD video out. It also had HD radio features. At the All Things Digital conference, Steve Ballmer announced the Bing rebranding of Microsoft Live Search.
That was the year that Bing launched in an official way. Other things that launched that year were Russia's investigation into antitrust proceedings.
That's also the year that that Microsoft would enter into a deal with Yahoo to provide search results for Yahoo. So Yahoo's search engine would be powered by the Bing search engine at that point. This is interesting because one year earlier, 2008, something I should have mentioned but I forgot to, was that Microsoft made a move to acquire Yahoo. And actually,
they wound up not following through with that.
Well, yeah, because Yahoo said that Microsoft had undervalued the what Yahoo was worth, and then Microsoft said, "Well, we don't want to play with you anyway." And then a year later, they said, "You want to use our stuff for your search engine?" And Yahoo said, "Yes." Yahoo itself was going through some pretty serious trouble at this point, and you know, if you've heard our Yahoo episode, you probably understand more about that and about how, you know, the company was really struggling for a while, and some would argue still is.
Sure. 2009 wasn't necessarily a terrific year for Microsoft. It was the company had some 90% of the global operating system market share. However, the stocks dipped to under $17 a share. That year, which was the lowest, basically in their history since 97.
Now, to be fair, this is also right around the time that there was a global depression.
Yes.
There was a global economic recession.
Uh-huh.
So,
it was the only year of their negative growth, since.
I love that phrase.
Ha.
Negative growth.
Negative growth. Yeah.
Yeah. And this was also the first year that Ballmer headed the CES keynote, on his own at Microsoft, as the Microsoft keynote. The delivery guy. I actually saw that one too. I saw the last Gates one and the first Ballmer one. Three interns were eaten that day.
Then in 2010, the Kinect was released. And
yes.
and the Kinect would be what would help the Xbox 360 overtake the PlayStation 2 and the Wii consoles.
PlayStation 3.
PlayStation 3 at that point. Yes, thank you.
It's okay. Yeah, no, and the Kinect, I think what was happening was that Microsoft saw that the Wii, when they released the Wii Move, I mean, that thing sold like crazy. It was almost impossible to find one of those things for months after its release.
And it was such a terrific kind of non-traditional market that they were aiming for, you know, aka ladies, which always offends me a tiny wee bit, but that's
senior
okay.
Senior citizens too.
Yeah. Right. It was just around that time that the consoles, that the major console players were starting to go like, hey, there are people in the world who might want to play games who are not 18 to 24-year-old males.
Yeah, well, and they were also just seeing that the Wii console was outselling the Xbox 360 and the PS3. Yeah,
yeah.
And it wasn't necessarily that Nintendo was really making groundbreaking games. It was that the hardware itself was creating a totally different way to play. And so the Kinect and the Move were both kind – I would argue those would have to be kind of responses to Nintendo's approach. I'm sure both companies would argue saying that it was, you know, this was always part of their strategy, but
– that it was the hardware capacity at the time.
When
sure,
you see but... when you see a company just run away with it like Nintendo was at the time – now, of course, Nintendo is in its own serious amount of trouble right now, but at the time it was doing really well. It just didn't have a lot of staying power. Like, people got tired of their Wii consoles in general. I mean, that's a generalization, but everyone I know owns one.
There's a game deficiency also.
There's a game deficiency as
well. Also, 2010 was the year of the Windows Phone 7, Microsoft Link, and the Office Suite 2010.
Yep. So now we're getting into this era where Windows Phone has taken over for Windows Mobile operating system. In fact, that had really started back in 2008. The Windows Mobile operating system was showing its age, and rather than continually trying to upgrade it, Microsoft made the decision to start with a brand new operating system designed specifically for smartphones and for tablets that they were calling Windows Phone rather than Windows Mobile. So, that's, you know, now we're seeing Windows Phone 7, which I guess was to mirror the Windows 7 operating system as opposed to show that this is the seventh version of Windows Phone. I don't even know. I can't tell.
Counting is fun.
Yeah, it sure is. 2011, that's when Microsoft announced that it would discontinue the Zune hardware development. So the great Zune experiment ended in failure. They could not replicate the success they had in the console market. I know a lot of people who listen to this show listen to it on Zune. In fact, we had people... whenever there was an issue with an RSS feed or something that was not properly going to the Zune marketplace, people would write in. Not a lot of people, but the people who did were very much...
very vocal about it.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it was a decent MP3 player. There was nothing wrong with it. It just never got the traction that other hardware had.
Sure. Well, also for, you know, yeah, kids that were PC versus Mac.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wait, that's a thing? Next, you're gonna tell me that pirates and ninja can't get along. 2012, Steve Ballmer delivers Microsoft's final keynote address at CES. I did not see this one. I missed it. I was at CES that year, but I didn't go to the keynote.
You did not go to this one, yeah.
No. But the company also said it would no longer maintain a space at CES. It would no longer have a booth there. And
which came off like a big step, but wasn't I think overall surprising in the industry because all of these large companies had for a while started kind of going like, well, why am I going to let all of these other places steal my limelight when I can just hold my own press conference
exactly.
and talk about anything that I want to and
kind of following the same route that Apple and Google were doing, which is hold your own event. And that way you can
if you're big enough, why not?
Yeah. You can announce things on your terms, on your schedule. Because the big issue with CES is, yeah, there's a huge spotlight that's on you because the whole world is there, it feels like at times. But one, you're sharing the stage with everybody else. And two, you have to have your stuff ready to announce at that particular time of year. If it's a product that you aren't ready to launch for another 5-6 months, announcing it early can sometimes be harmful. We saw that with the Palm Pre.
Sure.
The Palm Pre came out at CES one year, and everyone thought, this is the most amazing smartphone I've ever seen. I can't wait to get my hands on it. By the time it came out June of that following year, no one cared anymore. So this way Microsoft could determine
strategery.
Its own terms. Yeah,
yeah.
Better strategery. Exactly. So they left CES, and they also launched a new product in 2012. A brand new version of their operating system.
Windows 8?
Yeah, Windows 8.
This was the tablet-friendly, the multi-platform.
Friendly operating system. Mm-hmm. Yeah, to the point, well, some people would argue that it wasn't so friendly if you had a desktop or laptop, especially if you had one that did not have a touch screen.
Right.
But yeah, it was designed so that it could work on both touch screens and on traditional computers. And it definitely is very easy to use if you have a touchscreen interface. If you don't have a touchscreen interface, it takes a little bit more...
finagling.
Yeah. It takes a little more effort to navigate through. It also had a desktop version where, or a desktop setting where you could switch from the tiled view of Windows 8 to the a desktop look to it. Although the start button was missing at the time, but more on that in just a little while. It got mixed reviews. I would say mixed to negative. There were a lot of people who found it difficult to navigate at first. There were people who were missing a lot of the features that they had become used to. Again, this happens every time you update any kind of software.
Yeah.
But
and this is all still pretty fresh and recent. So, you know, and again, like not everyone, you know, people are starting to get touch screens for their home PC or laptop. But
yeah,
it's not widespread enough to really be. I think that Microsoft might have jumped the gun on that one.
Might have. I mean, they were really trying to push this forward. In fact, they've been doing that more recently. I think they're trying to become a leader in various areas, like a thought leader, not just an industry leader, but a thought leader in these spaces. But that means you get pushback because it means that you are abandoning certain things that people have, you know, come to rely upon or at least be used to. And it takes a while to convince folks that no, go with us because this is going to be great. You just have to let this other stuff go.
And I think it's really hard to do when you're this big, when you've got this much of an OS market share. Telling perhaps over half of the world that they need to catch up to the times and get a whole bunch of new hardware is a difficult sell.
There are different ways of doing it. Like Steve Jobs was very good at doing this over at Apple. Steve Jobs, I mean, he could tell you essentially what it was you wanted. That was his job. And the thing was, he was good at it. By the end of a speech, you were convinced you did want the thing he told you wanted. Whereas over at Microsoft, that doesn't necessarily always work out that way. 2012 is also when Microsoft launched the Surface tablet. So this was interesting because, again, they were getting into the hardware area. So they had the consoles, they had the failed Zune. Now they're getting into creating tablets. And it also was a little controversial because Microsoft is providing the operating system for other tablets running Windows 8.
Right.
So then the question was, are you actually entering into competition with your own partners?
Sure.
And that was a tough question. Microsoft, I think, was mainly saying that the reason they were developing Surface tablets was to inspire other companies to also build Windows 8 tablets and to just start the market, to establish a market that other companies could sweep in and take advantage of. I don't know. It's still early days, but Surface adoption has not been huge compared to things like Android tablets and, of course, the iOS tablets.
I think partially because of a little bit of that bad press about Windows 8.
Yeah, but I'm sure that has something to do with it. Then we get into 2013, this year.
Of
course, we're not finished with 2013 yet.
Certainly
not. We're recording this at the end of June 2013.
Mm-hmm. But as of yet, Microsoft has announced the Xbox One for release at the end of the year.
They announced it, and then they showed it off at first a couple of weeks before E3, and then at E3 they went into more detail. It initially got a lot of people raising criticisms for some of the decisions that Microsoft made. They wanted to go with a version of the Xbox One where you could buy games over digital lines, so you would just download the game, or if you bought it on disk, you would just use it to copy the game onto your drive, then you would never need the disk again. So it was a way to try and move away from physical media, but it meant that there had to be from the game developer perspective, there needed to be a way of verifying that the game itself was a legitimate registered copy, which meant that your console had to check in with servers on some regular basis.
Which they said was going to be every 24 hours.
Right. And certain games, if you were playing a game, it would have to check once an hour, but the system itself would be once every 24 hours. There was a lot of resistance on the gamer movement for that, and eventually
Well,
the Xbox president essentially said, we heard what you had to say, and we now are going to change these policies so that now you can play a game on a disc just like you could ever before. You could sell that disc when you're done with it. You can trade it. If it's a digital copy, then you cannot do that because that's just the way digital works. But if it's a physical copy and you're done playing, you can totally sell that back. Or you can buy a used copy and there'll be no restriction. There were some other changes that they made that were really to mollify gamers who were complaining about the changes that were being made. So that was a big story in 2013 with Microsoft. Also, just recently, Microsoft launched Windows 8.1, which is the newest update to the Windows 8 operating system.
And brings back the much-beloved Start button.
Yeah, it doesn't behave exactly the way it did in Windows 7 and earlier versions, but you know what? It's the behavior of the Start button has changed from version to version anyway, but it is back. It had been removed, and now it's back, and you can customize things like Start and lock screens. It also, Windows 8.1 adds support for 3D printers, which is kind of cool.
Very cool.
It also has deeper SkyDrive support. SkyDrive is Microsoft's cloud storage solution. And this, in 2013, they also sold off their IPTV division.
That's internet TV.
Yeah. Remember when they bought Web TV way back? Now they're getting rid of all that. They sold it to Ericsson.
Right. And this is really a move, I think, to focus on their Xbox internet TV related, departments.
I would imagine so. And they also have entered into a lot of partnerships with cable companies and broadcast companies.
Sure, sure.
So.
It's not that they're trying to get out of internet TV. It's just that they are focusing their efforts
on the hardware
on
side.
On selling a lot of Xbox Ones.
Yeah, that's the plan. I think they're going to sell a lot more now that they've reversed their position on several of the issues that gamers found particularly troubling.
Absolutely.
So that brings us up to date on what Microsoft's been doing and what the company's up to. And, you know, it's funny because I think every year since Ballmer has essentially become the head of Microsoft, there have been rumblings that the company would look for someone else to replace him because people seem to feel that Ballmer is not the right guy to be in charge, that he's not leading the company in an innovative way. I'm not the one to say that, but I've certainly heard it. And every time any discussion about Microsoft's corporate structure comes into play, I always hear somebody say, when is the board of directors going to demand a different CEO? You know, Ballmer's been there a long time and he knows the business really well. And it may be that his public persona, the idea, you know, the way that he comes off in these presentations, like I said, like a super intense dude, may not be indicative of his actual leadership style. I don't know. Never worked with a man. I'm terrified of him and I hide. it'll be interesting to see what happens with Microsoft in the future. I am curious to see how the Xbox One shakes out.
Yeah.
As well as the fact that they plan on continuing to support the Xbox 360. I'm also curious to see how Windows 8 shapes up now that we have 8.1 out there.
And whether or not they were again kind of prescient in their decision to make this a touch heavy.
We'll have to see. And of course, Windows Phone is one of those things that I've seen some projections that it could have as much as 17% of the market in like 2017, but that's a very small slice of the market. They're still really battling Android and iOS. I mean, those are the two juggernauts there. So Windows Phone is a good mobile operating system. I've used it a little bit. I mean, I don't own a device that runs Windows Phone, but the times I've used it, I thought it was pretty sleek and everything seemed to be working really well. I thought it was very pretty. I'm already really well invested.
You're already entrenched
in
Android, yeah.
Yeah, that one. It's the one I'm entrenched in. Sometimes up to my neck. All right, well, that wraps up our discussion about the company Microsoft. It's a big, big discussion. And obviously, we could do episodes about lots of the different things that we talked about here.
And maybe we will in another few weeks after this is rested for a little while.
When we can talk about something else in the meantime. Something fun, silly, like the NSA. So guys, if you have any suggestions for future topics for Tech Stuff, let us know. Send us an email. Our address is techstuff@discovery.com. Or drop us a note on social networking. You can find us on Facebook. You can find us on Twitter. You just have to look. Our handle is TechStuffHSW. And Lauren and I will talk to you again really soon.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com.
No surprise here, but you know I gotta have my devices when I travel. I would be lost without my smartphone. I use it for directions, to find things to do, and most importantly, where to eat. I rely on it as a digital music player to enhance my experience as I explore a new place. Oh, and sometimes I even use it to make calls and stuff. That's the kind of traveler I am. And if you travel, you know what kind you are, too. That's why you go with the Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card. If you travel, you know. We all can't help but wonder what adventure lies just over the next ridge. A Nissan Rogue, Nissan Pathfinder, or Nissan Armada will take you there. If you're taking on your adventure in a new 2024 Nissan Rogue, class-exclusive Google built-in is your always-updating assistant to call on for almost anything. Google Assistant, Google Maps, and Google Play Store are built right into the 12.3-inch HD touchscreen infotainment system of the 2024 Nissan Rogue. Nissan's SUV has the capabilities to take you where you want to go. Learn more at NissanUSA.com.
Diamonds Direct Spring Sale starts this weekend. Get 20% off rings, earrings, pendants, bracelets, and more. It's the best store-wide sale of the season. Plus, book an appointment and get an additional $100 off. That's 20% off plus $100 off store-wide. And enjoy an expanded selection of the latest styles with designer appearances each weekend. Tons of engagement rings on sale, too. 20% off starts Friday and opens Sundays. Details at DiamondsDirect.com.
Hello there. I'm Ann Thompson, editor-at-large for IndieWire.
And I'm IndieWire's deputy film editor, Ryan Latanzio.
And we're the co-hosts of IndieWire's weekly Screen Talk podcast.
Join us each week for an in-depth discussion of the latest in film and TV industry news with special guests along the way, including filmmakers and executives.
Hear from us every Friday morning on iHeart platforms or wherever you get your podcasts as IndieWire shares what we've learned from the movie week that was.